good moves. 30 minutes into my 40, I was feeling pretty optimistic. 5 minutes later, I wasn't, because the feds showed up. Two more cars stopped, right on Union Square West. Black Crown Vicks, waxed and bright and shiny. 8 men stepped out. I sensed the NYPD guys staring, sensed them staring through the dark, sensed them glancing at each other, sensed them asking, "Why the hell are those guys here?" I was good with the NYPD, not so with the FBI and the Department of Defense. I glanced at Gandhi. He told me nothing at all. I pulled out the phone again and hit the green button to bring up Theresa Lee's number. She was the last call I had made. I hit the green button again to dial. She answered immediately. I said, "The feds are here. How did that happen?"
"Shit," she said. "Either they're monitoring our dispatcher or one of our guys is looking for a better job."
"Who takes precedence tonight?"
"They do. Always. You should get the hell out of there."
I closed the phone and put it back in my pocket. The 8 guys from the Crown Vicks stepped into the shadows. The square went quiet. There was a faulty letter in a lit-up sign to my left. It sputtered on and off at random intervals. I heard rats in the mulch behind me. I waited. 2 minutes. 3. Then, 39 minutes into my 40, I sensed human movement far to my right. Footfalls, disturbed air, holes in the darkness. I watched and saw figures moving through shadows and dim light. 7 men, which was good news. The more now, the fewer later. And which was flattering. Lila was risking more than half her force, because she thought it would be hard to take. All 7 men were small and neat and wary. They were all dressed like me, in dark clothes, baggy enough to conceal weapons. But they weren't going to shoot me. Lila's need to know was like body armor. They saw me and paused 30 yards away. I sat still. In theory, this should have been the easy part. They approach me, the NYPD guys move in, I walk away and go about my business. But not with the feds on the scene. At best, they would want all of us. At worst, they would want me more than them. I knew where the memory stick was. Lila's people didn't. I sat still. 30 yards away, the 7 men separated. 2 stood still, anchored half right of my position. 2 scooted left and looped around and headed for my other flank. 3 walked on to get around behind me. I stood up. The 2 men on my right started to move in. The 2 on my left were halfway through their flanking maneuver. The 3 behind me were out of sight. I guessed the NYPD guys were already on their feet. I guessed the feds were moving too. A fluid situation. I ran. Straight ahead, to the subway gazebo 20 feet in front of me, down the stairs. I heard feet clattering after me, loud echoes, a big crowd, probably close to 40 people, all strung out in a crazy Pied Piper chase. I made it into a tile corridor and out again into the underground plaza. No violinist this time, just stale air and trash, and one old guy pushing a broom with a threadbare head a yard wide. I ran past him and stopped and skidded on my new soles and changed direction and headed for the uptown R train. I jumped the turnstile and ran onto the platform and all the way to the end and stopped and turned. Behind me, 3 separate groups followed, one after the other. First came Lila Hoff's 7 men. They raced toward me. They saw I had nowhere to go. They stopped. I saw looks of wolfish satisfaction on their faces. Then I saw their inevitable conclusion. Too good to be true. Some thoughts are clear in any language. They turned suddenly and saw the NYPD counterterrorism squad hustling right behind them. And right behind the NYPD guys were 4 of the 8 federal agents. No one else on the platform. No civilians. On the downtown platform opposite was a lone guy on a bench. Young. Maybe drunk. Maybe worse. He was staring across at the sudden commotion. It was 4:20 in the morning. The guy looked dazed, like he wasn't making much sense out of what he was seeing. It looked like a gang war. But what he was actually seeing was a fast and efficient takedown by the NYPD. None of their guys stopped running. They all piled in, yelling, with weapons drawn and badges visible, and they exploited their big physiques and their 3-to-1 numerical advantage and simply swamped the 7 men. No contest. No contest at all. They clubbed all 7 to the ground and threw them on their fronts and slammed cuffs on their wrists and hauled them away. No pauses, no delays, no Miranda warnings, just maximum speed and brutality. Perfect tactics. Literally, seconds later, they were gone again. Echoes clattered and died. The station went quiet. The guy opposite was still staring, but suddenly he was seeing nothing except a silent platform with me standing alone at one end and the 4 federal agents about 30 feet from me. Nothing between us. Nothing at all, just harsh, white light and empty space. Nothing happened for the best part of a minute. Then across the tracks, I saw the other 4 federal agents arrive on the downtown platform. They took up position directly opposite me and stood still. They all smiled a little, like they had made a smart move in a game of chess. Which they had. No point in more cross-track exploits. The 4 agents on my side were between me and the exit. At my back was a blank white wall in the mouth of the tunnel. Checkmate. I stood still, breathed the tainted underground air, and listened to the faint roar of ventilation and the rumble of distant trains elsewhere in the system. The agent nearest me took a gun out from under his coat. He took a step toward me. He said, "Raise your hands." Chapter 75. Nighttime schedules. 20-minute gaps between trains. We had been down there maybe 4 minutes. Therefore, arithmetically, the maximum delay before the next train would be 16 minutes. The minimum would be no delay at all. The minimum delay didn't happen. The tunnels stayed dark and quiet.